Hello, welcome back to the Clinicians Brief Partner Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Katie Berlin, and I am here with a very exciting guest today. I'm thrilled to have this conversation with Eric Garcia. Eric, would you mind introducing yourself?
Absolutely. So my name is Eric Garcia. I am an IT and digital strategist. I work exclusively with veterinary practices. I actually started my career working in a 12-doctor practice in Tampa, Florida while going through school. So this is a profession that I grew up in, and even after leaving that practice, decided to devote my career to. After working in the practice, had the opportunity to become the VP of a veterinary exclusive marketing firm. And it was really in that role that I got to see how hungry the entire profession was to understand how to better utilize technology to not only attract new clients, but also retain their existing clients. I am an advisory board member with the American Association of Feline Practitioners. Before COVID, I used to travel this beautiful world speaking to veterinary practices all over. And the reason I mention that is a lot of what we're going to talk about here today isn't really specific to us just here in the US and North America. Regardless of where we're at in the world today, the way that we communicate with one another has changed, and veterinary practices all over this world are looking for ways to better improve. And I was also the former marketing columnist at Today's Veterinary Business and have over 15 chapters in Wiley's 5-Minute Veterinary Practice Management Console.
Awesome. Yeah, I really miss your Instagram stories on planes. Yeah. this is going to be a great conversation because this is part of a 5-part series sponsored by Care Credit and Pets Best. And we've been talking about proactive versus reactive veterinary care and how being proactive can help keep our patients healthier. And we're talking about getting our clients thinking ahead. So when they're making decisions about their pets' care now, how does that affect the future? And of course, how they're going to pay for it. That's always a central topic. But if you've been following along with us in this series, you'll already know that we think communication is central to every aspect of good patient care. And today we're going to be talking about how we can maximize the opportunities that we have and maybe don't even know that we have to communicate and educate clients to build the satisfaction and the retention that we know is one of the most important aspects of good care. So I'm super stoked. And I know we have lots to talk about regarding communication during and after appointments, but I wanted to start out briefly by talking about what we could do before appointments to get started on the right foot. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I do. So a few things to really note here when we think about communicating before the appointment. There was a study that was done by a company called Digo. And in the study, they cited that only 1 in 4 pet owners knew about the COVID protocols that veterinary practices have shifted to in offering new care. And so when we think about that, and we think about the other challenge that we're facing in the profession right now, and that is we have pet owners who are frustrated, who are angry, who are lashing out at veterinary practices. Well, if we put our, and I first and foremost need to say that I never condone the behavior that pet owners have been exhibiting to veterinary professionals. But if we do just take one moment to step back and put ourselves in that pet owner's shoes, think about it. They are coming into the veterinary practice. 1 in 4 of them are learning for the first time that the way that you're about to offer care to their beloved pet is entirely different than it ever has been before. And the other thing that's important to note is that, you know, veterinary practices are one of the only businesses that are not allowing clients in the doors. And I would like to think it's because veterinarians and veterinary professionals are scientists and they believe in COVID and they understand the harmful impacts to it. And so they're doing everything they can to protect them. But what happens is these pet owners who don't know about this new way of receiving care are often flustered in that moment when you decide to take their pet from the car. A friend of mine has a friend of hers who's a colleague, who's a psychologist, and she took her pet to a veterinary practice, and they literally took her pet from the car. They explained to her that they'll follow up with her shortly, and 30 minutes later, she still hasn't heard from the veterinarian. Now, putting yourself in that pet owner's shoes, you know, you're worried. Did they find something? Is something going on? Did something happen to my pet? Is my pet sitting in a cage by itself, worried and frightened? And so a lot of this has to do with the lack of communication. So when we think about the before aspect, before they come into the veterinary practice, a few things that I recommend. One is all of your reminder messages, whether it's a reminder for a service, whether you're reminding pet owners of the fact that their pet is due for an annual exam or vaccinations, or whether it's an appointment reminder because the client has already booked an appointment. It is important that on both of those reminders that we change the messaging, that we let pet owners know of the new way that we're offering care. And for those service reminders where we let pet owners know about the importance of services, I also think it's important to make sure that we let the pet owners know that even though there's this pandemic going on, that caring for their pet is extremely essential and important. And so when we think about proactive communication, that is one of the most simple things that you can do that will make a big difference. In addition, of course, to consistently communicating on social media. In addition, of course, to having a pop-up on your website so pet owners know. In addition to sending emails periodically. The last thing I'll say on this is sometimes people will ask me, you know, Eric, aren't our pet owners tired of hearing about COVID-related announcements? You know, that's not fun. That's boring. And the answer is yes and no. When it comes to the care of their pet, no, not at all. They want to know that you're still there for them. And so it's important that we do understand that the COVID-related announcements that we're giving pet owners directly relate and impact the care that they end up getting for their pets.
Yeah, I think that's great. It's a great example, seeing now having to change so frequently how we've been doing things for so long. And I don't think this profession is particularly known for being quickly adaptable as far as our procedures go. So I think it's a good example of how we really need to kind of grab the bull by the horns there, because we know that that client standing in the parking lot finding out they can't come in is not the time. So, yeah. But that goes for other things besides COVID, right? Like if you have clients who bring multiple pets and they didn't realize that they couldn't do that, or if your low stress protocols are new and the clients don't know that they're not supposed to come into the waiting room anymore, these things all need to be communicated. Over-communicated so that's not going to be anything that a client has a question about. So, but COVID is definitely an extreme example and a really good one. What about when clients call in to check in on the day of the appointment? Are there different procedures that you can think of that we could be doing to kind of make life easier for the client and the team?
Yeah, a few things, and a few things that will really help make you more efficient and again, help aid in communication. And so whether it's the day of communication or even if we take a step back and even think about before the actual appointment, I am a huge advocate of client forms, creating digitized forms that we can email our pet owners ahead of the visit to ask them questions about how their pets are doing. There are a few reasons as to why we want to do that. One of the biggest reasons is that we know that pet owners, according to studies, that complete forms will provide more information about the health of their pet when you're asking them these questions and they're in the comfort of their own home. So if you ask me maybe the morning of and then I have an appointment in the afternoon, or maybe you ask me a day or two before, I am going to give you more of a thorough response. I'm going to give you exactly the kind of food my pet is eating and how much we feed. I'm going to sit and think about, you know, was there a lump that I noticed on my pet a few months ago? Or was there some suspicious behavior? I'm going to ask my significant other if there's anything that he or she has observed that is happening with my pet. We also know that that's important, and I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but I do a lot of work in understanding the cat owner mindset and how we should be communicating to cat owners differently than we do dog owners based off of all of the information that we have out there. But when we think about the value of forms and it brings to cat owners who, according to several studies, are typically known to be introverts, when you ask an introvert a whole bunch of questions that they don't have time to prepare for, they're going to give you very short responses. And so when you provide a health questionnaire to an introverted pet owner, in this case, it could be a cat owner, and they have time to prepare, they have time to answer these questions, we know that introverted people can act extroverted as so long as they have time to prepare for encounter and interaction. So the point here is that we get more of a complete medical history. we're more efficient in the practice because now we're not spending a whole bunch of time, whether you're here in Florida like me in the beaming hot sun, or whether you're somewhere up north in a snowy place, we're not spending all of this time curbside asking these pet owners all of these questions, who again themselves are stressed, right? They are had to take time off of work, and money right now for a lot of us is important, especially since we know in some places hours are being cut and things like that. And so there's a lot of stress that happens there when we ask them those questions. So let's provide a better experience. We become more efficient because now we can then hopefully take that pet from the car, bring them into the practice, and go ahead and offer care in that way. So it's important that we think about that, and that can be automated. You can, whatever system you use, Rapport, Ally DVM, you can set up automatic notifications for pet owners who have appointments booked to get those forms ahead of time.
Yeah, it's funny because we've all sat in that appointment and the owner's been sitting there super tight-lipped, you know, I don't know, the food that comes in the blue bag, or I don't know, let me call my wife because she's the one who buys the medicine or whatever. And then we have to sit there and wait for the phone call. And sometimes we're on speakerphone and they're just trying to do what we're asking, but we all get super annoyed. And why don't we just get that ahead of time? But it seems so simple when you say it that way. And I had a client actually send his cat in for a curbside appointment recently with a note. And it was like, we didn't ask for it. He sent in a piece of legal paper and it had like a list of all the things that the cat does and doesn't do and what he's concerned about. It was a wellness appointment. And then at the end, he signed it, "Let me know if you have any other questions, Mark, cat lad." And I was like, that's the best thing ever. Like, I got a note from Cat Dad about everything that I was going to ask about. And like, that was the coolest thing. And I was like, why don't more people do that? Well, why don't I ask them to? So that is a really, that's great. I'm a warm convert. You've converted me. Anyway. But so that sort of takes us into the appointment, right? We've talked about forms ahead of time, but how that can affect what we actually do in the appointment. But you know, I know a lot of practices are solely curbside right now. We've recently shifted back to curbside when we were letting clients in just because things are heating up again. And let's say, you know, we have a stacked morning of appointments, we have drop-off exams, we have surgery patients that need to be checked out, and we have multiple rooms loaded with pets whose owners aren't there. And it's just the time is getting away from us. That's always the big things, like that ticking clock. And we just feel like we don't have time to spend with each client the way that we would want to, especially now that we have to call them all. So what are some ways that you think vets and vet teams can get ahead of some of those questions without spending just an enormous amount of time with each client when we're so busy?
Yeah, so a few things. I want to quickly point out why it is that practices are busy. I think a lot of practices don't exactly know why. We have a lot of suspicion. The reason that practices right now are busy is because, according to a study that was recently released, 11.38 million households have welcomed a new pet during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a wild statistic there. And so practices are thinking maybe we're busy because of inefficiencies, or maybe we're busy because people are spending time with their pets and they're observing behavior. And certainly all of these things are a part of that. But 11.38 million pet owners are bringing their pets to you. And so I think what's beautiful about the question that you just asked is, if we think about what we can do to try to give pet owners that information that they so desperately want, that frankly, we don't have time to give. Because if you think about this for a second, 11.38 new pet owners, right? So these are people who, some of them, are, of course, are already have pets, and they're just adding to that. And some of them are new pet owners. And so we know that they go online and they do research themselves. I'm a huge advocate, and I always have been a huge advocate, for using a few different tools here. One is using social media to educate pet owners about how to properly care for their pets, making sure that we're, now that we know there are so many new pet owners, that we start educating them through places like social media, where we start providing handouts on how to potty train or how to litter box train a new kitten. Let's start giving them the education that we know they're hungry for. Let's also put that information on our website. I'm a firm believer that whether we're in the exam room with the client, whether we're talking to them over the telephone, and regardless of who that communication is coming from, whether it's the veterinarian or the customer service representative who's handling that phone call, I'm a firm believer that by the end of every call, we should always drive pet owners to our website for more information. We should always tell the pet owner who's having a flea question or the new puppy owner who's having issues house training their new dog. Ms. Ursi, I know that you have a lot more questions than you can probably think of right now, but I want you to visit our website and I want you to research the links that we have there so you can learn more about how to care for your pet. We don't provide pet owners with places to go to research information, and we can't really blame the pet owner for going to Google because, yes, we all do it, but because we as a profession are providing them access to good information. I'm also a firm believer in having some of those resources preloaded in your practice management software, links, educational documents. There's great content that comes from LifeLearn on the important on all sorts of topics. And most management platforms, within a simple click, you have the option to send that client information. If we have the form that's completed ahead of time and we know that they're going to bring up a particular issue and they're waiting curbside, what can we do to find a document that's related to one of those issues? Again, that the pet owner is facing, because now that we have that information ahead of time, we can go ahead and provide that. And here's why this is important. There have been studies in the UK and studies here in the US that show that, and this is pre-COVID, in the UK, we know that the average time a pet owner is spending with a veterinarian in the exam room is 9 minutes and 35 seconds. In the US, there was a dear friend of mine, Dr. Rick DeBose, who teaches at the Washington State College of Veterinary Medicine. In his life skills class, who teaches practice management and life skills, they do time motion studies where they go to a practice on site and they determine from the moment the pet owner checks in to the moment they check out, What are they doing? What's happening? And in that study, he was able to note that only something like 34% of the time is spent with the veterinarian. And so if we think about, hey, we have 20-minute appointments, we have 30-minute appointments, but we know a majority of that time is spent with the receptionist or the nurse, or in most cases, it's waiting, then what can we do to give them information to make them to make that more productive, so they're not flipping through their phone on Instagram or scrolling through TikTok? And what can we do to preemptively find out what some of their concerns are and give them education around that? So this way, your conversation can become more productive. The pet owner can become more knowledgeable, and it's all information that's endorsed by you, the veterinarian.
Yeah, that's amazing. I hadn't really thought about that, all the time they spend waiting and sitting there and kind of watching the clock as they scroll and just making sure that they have a little something to read during that time, whether it's a hard copy or a link. But that's a really neat idea and application of those forms that I hadn't really thought about before. What about immediately after the appointment? So do you always recommend that somebody follow up with a pet owner immediately after, or say in the next couple of days after an appointment, to check in and offer more resources at that time?
Yeah. So after their appointment, there are a few things that I do recommend. So certainly, you know, follow-up calls are important when we're making up follow-up calls. And especially since we're talking about the importance of proactive care and education here, a few things. If we're following up with the client when it comes to blood work, for example, I recommend that we change the way in which we communicate results to pet owners who have healthy pets or blood work results that came back within normal limits. I'll give you an example. When after the pet owner comes into practice and we run routine diagnostics, we'll call a pet owner back and we'll say something like, "Hey, Mr. Garcia, Elvis's blood work came back within normal limits. Everything looks good. We'll see you next year." Or sometimes we'll just kind of mention off, you know, CBC results and all these kind of results to the pet owner, saying, "Hey, yeah, this might look a little elevated, but everything else looks good. Parasite screen came back negative. We'll see you next year." Well, as a part of a retention strategy, as a part of education strategy, we need to tie a healthy pet back into that reason for a visit, back into that relationship that they have with their veterinarian. So what I recommend is after the visit, when we follow up for a healthy pet visit, we celebrate healthy blood work results. We tell the pet owner, we say something like, "Mr. Garcia, we're so excited. Elvis's blood work came back within normal limits. The heartworm test came back negative. The tick-borne panel came back negative. Blood parasite screen came back negative. Fecal test came back negative. The NexGard or the Bravecto or the Trifexis, whatever it is that they're giving, this is why your test heartworm came back negative. This is why your tick-borne disease panel came back negative. Blood work came back with the normal limits. The vaccinations are preventing disease. Everything that you and I are doing together is working." And so, you know, continue to reach out to us if you have any questions. So tying back a healthy pet to you, the veterinarian, to you, the veterinary professional, is absolutely critical at making sure that we engage that pet owner in a way that's meaningful. Again, as I mentioned, making sure that we use tools like social media to make sure that we're communicating with that pet owner after the visit who wants more information. So one of the other things that we should make sure that we're doing is I'm a firm believer in not just making sure that we utilize social media to educate those pet owners who are going to need that education after the visit, but also making sure that we have marketing campaigns that are meant to reach out to pet owners who really don't need us at the moment. One of the campaigns that I've been a firm believer of since the COVID pandemic started, but I think should stay well beyond the pandemic, is targeting pet owners who don't have vaccines that are due at the moment, who are current on services, and reach out to them with what I call a "We're Here for You" campaign. And that campaign is just a simple email saying, "Hey, don't forget that caring for your pet is extremely important. We are here for you. We understand the relationship that you have with your pet. And we want to make sure that you understand the importance of when services are due in the future to continue to come in, about the importance of vaccinations, about the importance of feeding proper nutrition. And if you need us, you can shop at our online pharmacy. You can schedule a telemedicine appointment. You can call us to reach out to us to have a conversation. We want to have several calls to action, book an appointment, because it's important just to reach out to pet owners and just say, hey, if you need us, we're here for you. The great thing about that campaign is it's not just great at putting yourself in front of the pet owner to remind them of your existence, but it's also great because it is able to educate pet owners when they are due for services, whether it's in 10 months from now or whether it's in 2 months from now, that when they get that reminder that it is important that they go ahead and come in for that service. So we're giving them time to prepare. And one of the other things that I think is important as a part of a We Are Here For You campaign is if you offer care credit, put that in that marketing campaign to let pet owners know before they actually need financing to go ahead and apply for it. And it's the same thing with after the visit, and we think about future reminders. So when we have reminders for maybe pets that have routine diagnostics that they need done on a recurring basis because maybe they're on a medication like phenobarbital, or senior pets who need to come in twice a year, or even annual visits, I want a link that shows me that you offer care credit on that reminder message. So this way I know that there are ways that I can better afford to make sure that I care for my pet. And that's important because 45% of pet owners say that right now they're experiencing financial hardship, and 55% of pet owners expect to experience financial hardship. And so what can we do before, during, and even after to make sure that they continue to bring their pets to us, that we continue to educate them, and that we help them continue to afford caring for their pets?
Yeah, that's great advice, because it really all comes down to getting ahead of the questions, right? You're talking about making sure that clients have resources to look at before they're at home Googling after the appointment because they didn't get enough from us, or while they're waiting for the appointment and they're like, "Why is my dog limping?" And getting ahead of those questions is important, but getting ahead of how is my pet's wellness appointment going to work in 6 months? How are they going to react when my pet's gained weight? Or, how am I going to pay for this appointment? Getting ahead of those questions is just as important. And it seems like we are constantly talking about how when clients are in the room with us, we have to go over things more than once for it to stick. And so talking about things when they're not stressed and they don't really need us right at that moment seems like a good way to kind of get it in the door so that it's in the back of their minds for when they do need it. So that's really great advice. And I also wanted to go back to something you said about driving pet owners back to our website whenever we take a call or have interactions with them. Our goal is always to get to that website so that that can be a trusted source of information for them. And I was wondering about resource creation. You know, we are all really busy in this field right now, everybody. So how much time do you recommend that vet clinics and vet teams spend creating their own content versus linking to content made by someone else? Do you feel like it makes a big difference in the eyes of the client?
It can make a big difference. So, and I say it can make a big difference in the sense that if a client is reading a resource that was written by you, authored by you, has your face on it, has a team member's face on it, an associate veterinarian's face on it, yes, they're going to be more inclined to read that. And that's not theory. We do see practices that share content that they've created get far more engagement, clicks, people who read them, watch them, than content that maybe you didn't create. But that's not to say that if it's content that you didn't create, that it's not successful. It's just not as successful. But you're still going to get a large number of people that will view the content that if it's something that you're reusing. So time is always an issue. And so here's normally what I would recommend for practices. If you have absolutely no time, so you can't do, you're stretched thin, you know, we know why you're busy. And so I don't want you to say, well, I'll get to that in the future. Because, you know, I remember what it was like working in a practice, and I still work, you know, I consult with practices, and I know that if we say, well, we'll get to it, that we never really actually get to it, or we do, and it's just such a long period of time. So a few things here. One is spend a little bit of time going to the AVMA's website, going to many of the colleges of veterinary medicine websites, going to websites like Care Credit's website, going to Pet Health Network Pro, going to vetstreet.com, finding good pro veterinary resource websites and gathering a whole bunch of those links and link them up onto your website. That's the easiest thing that you can do now, because if you link up, say, five different websites that all have hundreds of articles already written, then that's more than enough to satisfy that hunger that exists when it comes to education for our pet owners. Or another solution that you could take advantage of is LifeLearn has long been known in the veterinary industry at creating all kinds of educational resources for pet owners, whether it's an educational library that you can license to integrate to your website. So when a pet owner is Googling a term that you'd mentioned in the exam room that they were ashamed to admit that they didn't really know what it meant, that they can look at that information directly on your website using that library, or whether it's something that they want to learn more about. Maybe their cat was just diagnosed as a diabetic. So they can go to your website and they can go through the LifeLearn library. Eventually, I always recommend, when time permits, and I understand that you might get time in a month from now, I understand that you might get time 6 months from now, but whenever that might be, when time permits, there are things that you can do that go a long way at client education that you can create yourself. So I'll give you an example of one of the easiest, most effective things that you can do. Creating a video of a veterinarian or a credentialed veterinary nurse in the practice, where what you do, because I know that most veterinary professionals and veterinarians, if you put a camera in front of them, they're going to freeze and it's not going to be that great. So I have to admit, and I'm still very much this way now, but if you were to, and it's different for me from a webinar to sitting down in a studio or sitting down in someone's set and it's just me in the room. I'll give you a great example. I did an interview for DVM 360 maybe 3 years ago, and it was just me, a whole bunch of lights, and they were asking me questions. It was the videographer that was asking me questions. And it's the worst video ever.
It's an interrogation, right?
That's exactly it. Yeah. And so if you ever want to laugh, just go to DVM3. I don't even share it on my social media because it's not embarrassing. Like I freaked out. I started sweating. But you know, you can put me in a stage, you can put me on a, I'm comfortable, but there's something about that. And, and so I know a lot of veterinary professionals can be like that as well. And so the easy thing that makes a world of a difference for a lot of people is, you know, get the camera, certainly put the camera at an angle to record, but have someone else in the room, whether it's a receptionist, whether it's a technician, a nurse, a kennel assistant, just have someone else in the room. And don't look at the camera, talk to that person. So it's going to be at a different angle. You don't have to look at the camera. There are effective ways of which you can do this. And then speak to that person as if you were speaking to a pet owner. If a pet owner just asked you a question about how to give insulin to their cat, if a pet owner just asked you whatever question it is, if a pet owner just asked you, what should I pay attention to with my new puppy that I just adopted during COVID? Talk to that person as if they were a pet owner and ignore the fact that there's a camera off to the side. But what's great is that you will have, you know, 2, 3, maybe even 4 minutes of video footage. Now you can take that video footage and you can do a few things. You can now incorporate that as a part of an email newsletter. You can share that on your social media. You can now put it on your website that says trusted resources from Dr. Berlin. And then you have those videos there that you put. And then there's a website that you can go to called rev.com. It's rev.com. And for normally a 4 minute video might cost you less than $10. So less than $10, what will happen is they will give you a read ready transcript of that video. So what read ready means is that it removes imperfections like, you know, those things that we naturally say when we speak. And then they add punctuation, you know, they add commas. They add periods. They really edit that in a way that if someone were reading it, they wouldn't have been able to tell that it was a video to begin with. And so now that read-ready transcript becomes an article that then you can link up to your website. It becomes something that you can put into your practice management software and send as a follow-up note to a client who might be needing more information. It can be a push notification that you send out where you target pet owners who have pets that are less than a year old. So that one little video that may take you, say, 30 minutes at max to get 4 minutes of footage can go such a long way to really provide that education in a way that comes from you, in a way that satisfies that hunger. One last thing I want to mention on this is we talk about creating resources, but it's important to understand why we do this. We know that more than half of our millennials and our boomers, so our youngest and our oldest, want access information. That was a study that was quoted in DVM 360. I think it's something like 63% of millennials and 54% of boomers want access to information. There was another study that was put out by the Colorado State University and Vets of Pet that says something like 70 or 68% of pet owners want to access pet health articles in an app. We know that there's so much information in terms of, we know that it's something like 68% of cat owners say that if they knew that they could prevent health problems for their cat by bringing their cat into the veterinarian more often, that they would do so. So we know that our pet owners want access to information. And this is what we're doing, whether we're getting links that already have great information, whether we're creating a video that we're repurposing, or whether we're licensing content from a company like LifeLearn. What we're doing is we're satisfying that hunger for information that we know our pet owners want.
Together, Care Credit and Pets Best are empowering a lifetime of care for more pets by helping clients be financially prepared. Our simple, flexible, budget-friendly choices work together to help them manage the cost of care. Routine to unexpected, first year to senior care. Providing financial care for pet parents supports lifelong care for patients. Learn more at carecredit.com/providercenter/veterinary. Yeah, Eric, I think that is a fantastic point, because there's definitely been moments where, at least for me, I've thought, I'm overwhelming this client. Like, they do not want this much information. And if I give them one more handout, like, they're just going to go home and throw it all in the trash. And I feel like what you're saying is that with all these different media that we have available to us now, we don't have to overwhelm them in the exam room. And in fact, that doesn't really benefit anyone, because then we're taking our time and our team's time and the client's getting overwhelmed. And then there's that big hole that happens between the exam room and the car where they forget everything that we said anyway. And because I know that happens to me, like when I go to the doctor and I want to know everything, you know, I'm probably a terrible patient. I think you guys probably are. Because I want to know everything. And then if they tell it all to me at the appointment, I'm going to forget it. But I'm going to go home and Google for sure. So I'm the biggest culprit. And none of my doctors, you know, most of my doctors don't have links on their website that you can click on to learn about your injury or, you know, whatever stupid thing I did to myself running too much. And I would really appreciate that, because I don't know who to trust otherwise. And I probably, you know, should be pretty aware of that given my background, but it is still really hard. So I think that's a really great point, that we need to use the resources we have to let clients decide how much they want to know.
I love what you just said there, is you don't have to say it all in the exam room.
Yeah. Like,
you're so right, because the too much information in a short period of time, it can, you know, can overwhelm people, and they won't. There was a study in the UK, which I think is would be common sense, but when we give too much information in a short period of time, that it impairs the ability for that person to understand the importance of, in this specific study was on preventive care, meaning that if we go over too much in a short period of time, that people are not going to understand, and therefore they may not understand the value of preventive care. I think that, yeah, what you just said was just so beautifully true. It's let's use all these other resources to get them that content that they can consume on their time.
Yeah. And that frees us to spend more time working on the experience with them, so that they were somebody that they trust to send them to a good place. And I think sometimes that experience suffers if we're trying to get too much into too small a time slot. And so you had mentioned social media a couple times, and I know I'm really excited to talk about this, because I'm very passionate about social media. I know that that's a big topic for you too. Even though we sometimes hate it, we also love it. It can be the best and the worst part of the day. But I went to a talk that you gave at one time. I think it was at VMX on marketing to millennials. And I'm technically an exennial, but I identify a lot with what you were saying, which is that, you know, people want to get information, want to see things happening from people that they know, like, and trust. You know, they want to see familiar faces. They want to say, that was my vet tech, or that was the doctor that helped my cat, and not necessarily a stock photo or a YouTube video that we just happened to share on social media. And I feel like that just, because that's what I want to see. So can you just talk a little bit more about how you think social media can work best for veterinary hospitals?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the first things that I like to mention when it comes to social media is that for the practice who may be newer to it, or the practice who maybe is on social media but doesn't use it often, And for those people who engage with it in that way, who then look at where social media is at today, maybe from when they were first thinking about getting started, or maybe when they first got started, and they look and they're like, well, geez, social media used to just mean Facebook, but now it probably means Instagram, it probably means TikTok, it probably means Twitter, it probably means, you know, Tumblr or something else. A lot of practices get overwhelmed with just all of the social media opportunities that exist out there. And so what I first want to say is social media strategy. So the core concept of what we know engages people, which we can certainly talk about, is true regardless of the channel that you're communicating on. So what we know engages a pet owner on Facebook will engage a pet owner on Instagram, will engage a pet owner elsewhere. But the other thing that we also know is that while there are a lot of social media channels, you shouldn't be communicating on all of them. And the reason for that is, you know, I'll give you an example. A lot of practices over the last few months have been, especially since COVID hit, have been talking about TikTok. And they will ask questions like, do I need to be on TikTok? I just now understood Facebook. And so now I have to move away because I hear that kids are not using Facebook, they're using TikTok. And so I always tell practices that the social media channels that are worth spending time on are Facebook and Instagram, and then YouTube if you feel comfortable creating video. And it's not just because we hear of things like TikTok and Snapchat doesn't mean that there are enough pet owners or enough of our clientele on it to support the utilization of it. And I'll give you an example. When Facebook and Twitter were really big in the beginning, before anything else, I didn't actually recommend Twitter because we didn't see enough engagement from pet owners on the average veterinary practice's Twitter account to justify using it. So I don't want a practice to be somewhere communicating something that no one is reading. And it's the same thing for TikTok and it's the same thing for Snapchat. Yes, they're popular, but they don't have the nearly 1 billion, the over 1 billion users that Instagram have. They don't have the close to 3 billion users that Facebook has. And so we know that the population that actually uses those other social media networks are actually very, very small. So if you were to spend your time everywhere, then what you're doing is you're not efficient in how you're communicating on social media. And so, you know, master the art of Facebook, then move to Instagram, then consider YouTube. People like me will look at TikTok and say, okay, now it's important and we should take advantage of it. And here's how we do it. So I like to mention that because there's often this kind of concern that exists from veterinary professionals about, wow, I'm way, way too behind. So there's still hope there. But the value that social media can bring brings a level of personalization in how we provide education, which we kind of just talked about. Social media to me should be used for education. And a lot of people always tell me, they're like, Eric, no one likes education on Facebook. No one likes education on Instagram. And I agree at the traditional ways of providing education as not being engaging. We talked about how articles are important, but I don't recommend that you share an article every day on Facebook or attempt to do it somewhere else, because that's not what engages a pet owner. And it's the same thing when it comes to communicating with pet owners about the importance of preventing disease. I don't want you to go on social media and share a fact or a statistic that says 1 in 3 pets at some point will become diagnosed with heartworm disease. Your pet owner is not looking at that and saying, I need to go give heartworm prevention right now because 1 in 3 dogs will do that. Economists, when we share facts and statistics like that on social media, well, not specific to social media according to economists, but economists will say that that's the invisible victim. When you say 1 in 3 this or this percentage of that, right? If we say 56% of dogs will have periodontal disease, that's the invisible victim. We don't do anything. But when we see a story of a real dog that was diagnosed with heartworm disease, or when we see a story of a cat that has a grade 4 dental disease, then that's when we're moved to act. That's when we decide, wow, this is a real thing. There are real pets that are being affected by that. And that's what gets pet owners motivated to move forward with the importance of preventive care. And I think social media can be used to educate our pet owners if we tell the stories of the pet owners that we see in our practices, of the pets that we see in our practices. Of course, we need pet owner consent. But, a good friend of mine who a lot of people know, you know, Dr. Sue Attinger uses, and I know Katie, you know her as well, you know, uses social media to educate pet owners about the myths and misconceptions of cancer. If your pet was diagnosed with cancer, just like when humans are diagnosed with cancer, we assume that it means death and that no one's going to tolerate chemo. But what she does on her social media, she shows pet owners that if your pet is diagnosed, it doesn't mean the end of times. Most pets tolerate cancer treatment well. And it's the same thing about educating pet owners early on to be more cautious about lumps and bumps that they find in their pet and to bring those pets to the vet sooner. And so I'm a firm believer in using social media in that way. The other thing here is that when we share these short stories, which by the way, they only need to be 3-4 sentences max, right? And normally what I recommend is, what did the pet come in for? What was that issue? And then give me 2 sentences. How did you help that pet with that issue? Right. And then potentially have a call to action at the end. Right. So very, very short. It doesn't need to be this long blog that I know you don't have time for as an opportunity to educate. But we know that according to psychologists, that people remember information when it's woven into a narrative 22 times more than straight facts alone. And so to me, that's what social media is for. In addition to engaging with our pet owners and to having some fun with them, it doesn't all have to be education, right? So I only recommend maybe 1 or 2 educational posts a week. Then the rest of the time, I want you to share pictures of how hard you're working to make sure that pets continue to receive the care that they need. I want you to stop and take a selfie to connect with the pet owners who follow you on social media to say happy Friday, everyone. I want you to take a picture of one of those clinic kittens or a patient that came in that is doing something goofy. I want you to take a video of the doctor who's in a great mood, who's just being silly in the back, and share that on social media. Because social media is a retention tool. Retention in the sense that we're educating, and retention in the sense that we're putting ourselves in front of our pet owners on a recurring basis. And so there's so much value that brings when we're communicating with pet owners.
Yeah, I love that so much. Like, I can't even tell you, because I feel like the photos that we put up are sneaky education, right? They're like, there's social proof that somebody else brought their puppy in during COVID and everything went fine. Somebody brought their pet in for a dental and everything went fine. And that's giving a message too, even though it just looks like cute puppy pictures. And I don't care what anybody says, like, the cute puppy pictures are still always the most popular. Like, you can't fight it. You got to just go with it. But that doesn't mean that you can't include a message there too. And I just love that so much. So, you know, everything you just said is so important, because I think a lot of people are afraid of social media and possible backlash, or are we boring people? Are we overwhelming people? But sometimes it's just about telling the story of what we do every day.
I love that you said sneaky education. I think that's my favorite thing I've heard in a long time. That's such a valid point. They're like, wow, I'm being educated and I don't even know it. That's a great term.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to be mindful of your time. You've been so generous with your time. But the last thing I wanted to mention was just, you know, this has been such a good discussion about how we can get clients to feel more involved, more empowered, more informed. Do you feel like that relates to the topic that we're all sort of in the back of our heads all the time right now in vet med, which is veterinary team wellness? Do you feel like that's going to have an impact on the wellness of the team as well as our clients?
It absolutely does. And here's why I feel it does. I'm a huge advocate for technology. This is what I spend my career really educating practices on the importance of. And I think that I need to do a better job at, and I think we all need to look out for each other and do a better job at, making sure that we understand the value that this technology brings, right? Using text messages to communicate with pet owners, to allow them to book appointments, using telemedicine to connect with pet owners, using social media to allow pet owners to book appointments or to learn more about how to care for their pets, managing reviews online and making sure that that's important, any technology. But we need to make sure that we run the technology and the technology doesn't run us. And so when we think about this mental health aspect of this and how it affects veterinarians and veterinary professionals, it's important to make sure that we set proper boundaries when it comes to communication technology, and that we set proper expectations for ourselves and for our pet owners. Some examples as to how we do this is, if we enable text messages as a form of communication on our practice, that we have automatic responses anytime someone sends us a text message that says it's going to be up to 24 to 48 hours before we respond to that. That we have auto responses on Facebook, so when a pet owner sends us a message, it says things like, if this is an emergency, call our practice. If this is after hours, call the emergency clinic, or please allow us X number of hours to respond. Unfortunately, and this is probably more difficult for smaller practices, unfortunately, I have seen a few different things. One story that I share is a veterinarian who I was giving a lecture on the importance of distancing yourself from technology. And she was a solo practitioner, and she had really been listening to a lot of people about the importance of using technology to communicate. And she got to a point to where if pet owners asked her questions on social media, that she would answer them. I've heard a lot of veterinarians through the years who tell me that they allow pet owners to text them because they want to build a relationship with that pet owner and they want to build loyalty with that pet owner. I had a young veterinarian earlier this year at a conference, or maybe last year, tell me, she said, "Eric, I love texting pet owners because I leave work at 3 because I have to go pick up my child. And then I come home, and after I put my child down for bed, you know, around 6:37, I text my pet owners that for the day, through the day. And I do that because I build a strong relationship with them." And my issue with this is that, you know, it's always gravy when you're there to respond and you respond in a timely manner. But when you're not there to respond because you decide to prioritize your family that weekend or your own mental health that day, we know clients aren't always as patient and kind. And so this veterinarian had a pet owner who sent her a message on Facebook. She decided to take one of the first vacations she had taken in a long time. And for her, that meant not going on social media. And she came back and she had a pet owner who messaged her. There was something urgent that was going on with this pet owner's dog. And the veterinarian messaged her days later and said, "Hey, you know, did you seek emergency care?" And the pet owner said, "No, I was waiting on you to respond." Now, common sense has to come into play here, right? Obviously, any pet owner who doesn't get a response doesn't, you know, they don't wait for their veterinarian days later. But the pet died, and the veterinarian took that as if it was her fault. She should have been there for that pet owner, and she was telling the story, and she's crying, and I'm crying. It's this big emotional thing. But she said to me and the group is, she said, I'll never be able to take a vacation again because things like that happen. And I don't want anyone to get into that position because there are things, again, setting boundaries, putting up auto responses, setting proper expectations is important. And those are ways that we can prevent that from happening. But we shouldn't just say, I give up. I'm just not going to do this for myself anymore. And so one of the things I've been a huge advocate of is taking digital breaks, what I call a digital sabbatical or unplugging, where you go periods of time where you delegate this to someone else and you go and you enjoy life without technology. I believe that we need to take breaks from social media to where we don't check it compulsively 20 times a day, but that we have periods of time, whether it's during the week, whether it's a few times a month, whether it's a few times a year, that we spend a day or two where we're not on social media. For me, I will spend weeks throughout the year, for the exception of COVID, where I don't go on social media, because this technology, and this, by the way, we can talk about for an entire hour, but this technology that we engage with that helps our pet owners and helps that relationship we have with them and brings us some joy in our life actually causes more harm than good. You know, we are constantly looking at social media, hopefully to find joy or entertainment, but we compare ourselves to others. You know, we go online and we look at what our friends and our colleagues have and we say, well, I don't have that. We go on social media to show people what we have and they don't have. And we start our day off with these negative feelings. A lot of times where we open our phone at 6 in the morning when the alarm goes off and we go on social media and we see something we don't like and we carry that negative energy to work. And that's how we're starting our day. We're not even giving ourselves an opportunity to start off on the right foot. And so we have a bad day and that just continues to go downhill from there. So yes, to the long way of saying this is, yes, this has a direct impact on mental health and it's important to set boundaries for the practice. And the pets, it's important to set boundaries from work. We know that because you're a nurse or you're a veterinarian that works at a practice, and just because someone can send you a text message doesn't mean that we shouldn't set boundaries to not allow them to do that. We have to, when we leave work, we have to leave work. someone else is going to be there to care for that pet. We create this idea of self-importance that we think no one can do what we do and only we have these answers, and that's not true. We can try to convince ourselves of that, but it's not true. So we need to set boundaries from work, and then we need to set technology boundaries ourselves. But so hopefully we understand that there is value, but we just have to control that and how we choose to engage with pet owners in that way.
That is most excellent advice when it comes to veterinary wellness and anybody's wellness, I think. You know, it's not definitely not limited to veterinary teams, that technology needs to be something that helps us and doesn't run our lives. So that's excellent advice. And I think that's a good place for us to wrap up. But Eric, thank you so much. This has been so much fun. And I do think we could sit here for another hour talking about all this stuff, but maybe next time. But thank you so much for being so generous with your time. This has been a lot of fun.
Truly a pleasure. And thank you. And Dr. Berlin, thank you for all that you're doing as a veterinarian to make sure that pets continue to receive the care that they need. It's, you know, as a pet owner who's had to take my pet to a veterinarian during COVID, I appreciate you. And I know what everything that you're going through. And I appreciate you and all of our listeners who are playing a big role in that process. But thank you. It's truly been a pleasure.
Thank you for saying that. And thanks to Care Credit and Pets Best for bringing this series to you. Don't forget, this is one of 5 episodes where we're talking about proactive care, helping our teams and our clients prepare better for a lifetime of health. So check out the other episodes if you haven't done so already. Thanks for joining us. Thanks again to our sponsor and to today's guest for joining us, and thanks to you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. While you're there, please make sure that you subscribe, rate, and review. We would appreciate if you leave us all of the stars. You can also listen to podcasts on our website at cliniciansbrief.com/podcasts, and you can drop us a line at podcasts@briefmedia.com. Clinicians Brief Partner Podcasts is a Brief Media production.